Welcome back to Discourse, the weekly occult and esoteric podcast hosted by myself, Abimon the Great, and Dr. Anna Stone. This week we're discussing spiritual psychosis and how it's manifested with the rapture and artificial intelligence. Some of the content in this episode may be disturbing as we detail our own personal experiences with it. We encourage our audience to seek professional help if they find themselves in a similar situation. Breathe in, young magus, and let the work begin. Three, two, one. Okay, welcome back to Discourse with myself, Abimon the Great, joined as always by Dr. Anna Stone.
Hello.
This week we're going to be discussing spiritual psychosis because a lot of the news lately, I really didn't want to talk about the rapture on here, but we were getting comments and I didn't think we were going to respond to the comments. It was just like, you know, that's not something we need to touch on, but it seems really prevalent because we also wanted to talk about it when in terms of like AI psychosis as well.
Right.
Like we wanted to do an episode on AI psychosis. So we're going to just do an episode about spiritual psychosis in general,
right.
Because it's a really important skill for occultists to have.
To be able to identify, especially if one is experiencing it, you know, because it is. It's very important, actually, because I think most of us get to some level of psychotic, and when we are learning, things like,
well, it is. It's one of the biggest warnings on the occult. Like from an outsider's perspective,
sure,
that's one of the things they always say. It's like, don't dabble in the occult. You don't know what you're dealing with. It can drive you crazy, like that. Kind of stuff,
and it can, because the thing is that you're never going to get the answers, like really, you're not ever going to find there's no end to the path, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a rabbit hole with offshoot rabbit holes all along the descent, right? So it is real easy to get caught up. But I mean, just from my experience of, you know, being on social media for many years now and seeing some of the comments and posts by people I know sometimes, or, you know, sometimes are people I know, and I'm very perplexed by the amount of just blind faith without questioning anything, you know, that someone will go like believe something to be true because they want it to be true.
Yes.
So this is a lot about psychology, truly, but it's also you know, just a cautionary kind of tale and information, so that if you're experiencing it or you have experienced it, hopefully we'll, you know, be able to help you identify that with this information.
Identify it, learn to recognize the signs
and how to get out.
Yes, and I'll share. It's something I've been through quite a few times in my life.
You have. I don't know how I have not, seeing as how I've been confronted with some very crazy, insane things that shouldn't occur in my, you know, in normal worldview, right?
Yes.
I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know if it's like, oh, you didn't have psychosis from that, so because you're already crazy. I'm not sure. But there's a saying in psychology where it's, you know, if you're asking if you're crazy, you're not crazy.
Yes.
If you have experiences that occur and they are so out of this world compared to what you were taught is true and things like that, and it doesn't make you question whether or not it really happened, whether or not you're losing your mind, you might be crazy. You know, it's possible. But the thing is that crazy, you know, generalized term here, obviously not clinical, you know, people don't question it. They just go with it. And you know this.
Yes.
Because you did that. Right?
What?
So you just ran with it. Like you didn't.
Oh, yeah. The worst one, the one that turned me into an occultist, that dragged me kicking and screaming onto this path. That one I was frustrated I was frustrated because nobody would listen to me, because I knew what I was experiencing was like reality. And I still kind of hold on to a little bit of it too. I'm never like, I was wrong.
You weren't wrong.
But
see, that's the problem here.
I was unhealthy. That's for sure.
Obsessed.
I was obsessed and unhealthy, but we can go into that.
Yeah.
Into that later. We'll share a little bit about my experiences. For the audience, you guys only know me as Avamon the Great Wizard, right?
Yeah.
I was not always a great wizard. I was a very unstable, dirty occultist for a very long time.
Yeah,
and before that, quite a messy person. So I'm definitely a testament to the power of transformation on the magical path.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and likewise, despite the fact that I've had definite, you know, crisis because of spirituality. I've been in crisis because having to reconcile what I'm experiencing with what I've been taught to be true was hard, you know, has been hard, still is hard. But also it's, you know, if you can frame it the right way, it can be transformative rather than, you know, detrimental, right?
Yeah.
So let's talk about, first of all, let me give you the definition of spiritual psychosis. This term is not new. It is not, it is in the terms of science new, but it really started being kind of a buzzword on social media, you know, around the pandemic time, I think. And I can see why. But the actual definition is spiritual psychosis is a term often used to describe a state where an individual experiences severe alterations in perception, mood, and behavior that are linked to spiritual or mystical beliefs. While spiritual experiences can often be enlightening and transformative, psychosis can lead to disconnection from reality, causing distress and confusion. So spiritual psychosis, by definition, is something that you're experiencing or have experienced that literally caused your life to have problems. Like it caused you problems in your life. That is what a psychosis is, right? You're not functioning anymore the way you're supposed to be within groups or, you know, society. You might be demanding people's phones or something, you know, it's so that you can talk to them without the government hearing you. You know, it's something that's detrimental in your life at the time, right? Causing either fear, paranoia. Okay, so let me backtrack. So the symptoms are hallucinations, auditory, visual, or even sensation, right? But the thing is that not always are hallucinations part of psychosis. So, you know, delusions. What's a delusion? A delusion is a belief based on zero fact. Like literally, you know, like if you were to say you were dating Mother Teresa, right? She's not even alive, you know, and that's common. People have those. I mean, we know about the stalkers, the celebrity stalkers that do this, right? Where they think Madonna's in love with them or something, you know. Disorganized thinking. Now, I'm guilty here. This one is funny because when I saw this, I was like, uh-oh. This is when you talk to somebody and they jump from one topic to the other incoherently and want you to keep up with them. This is like the hallmark of how I speak.
Forgive me, I'm not a psychologist or psychiatrist, but it's my understanding just because you have one of these symptoms does not mean you are in psychosis, right?
No, of course. These are symptoms that can manifest.
So if you are experiencing one or more of these symptoms...
No, I'll tell you how to know.
Yeah,
I got it. Yeah. Okay. So, but with the disorganized thinking is it's difficult to organize your thoughts, obviously. So then you have incoherent speech and, you know, even just maintaining a train of thought, you know, it could be difficult. Which then impacts your ability to communicate with others. Mood disturbances, this is emotional fluctuations, you know, like kind of rapid cycling of mania, depression, or anxiety, and then even apathy, right? And then this one's really common, a feeling of specialness. A feeling of specialness. This is that you've been chosen or have a special connection you know, with a higher power, which, you know, if you tell people that, they're going to probably not want to hang out with you. So, like, you know, yeah, that can alienate you as well. And then grandiose beliefs, like these are, so this, you know, kind of sounds a little bit like narcissism, in case you haven't been keeping track. These are also the symptoms associated with narcissistic personality disorder. So, right. But the difference between that and also borderline personality disorder, the difference between those two and a spiritual psychosis is that the root of it has to do with some spiritual, religious, or mystical cause.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So these things, so a lot of times people undergoing spiritual psychosis can get labeled incorrectly, misdiagnosed as having a personality disorder. Then paranoia is the next one, the other one. It's paranoia. And that could be paranoia about things that are real, like, you know, like people after you, or like demons, or, you know, whatever, the government. That's, government's real common for some reason.
Yes, it is.
And the things that, so what can trigger this, like trigger these psychoses is, aside from, okay, we're already assuming here that the person's in the occult, like working in the occult somehow.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that there's some stress or trauma in their life. Substance abuse.
Yeah.
Substance abuse is like a big one, because we all know how hard it is to talk to somebody who's on something, right?
Yeah.
You know, so, but this also just lowers inhibitions and is allows people to be more like susceptible to things. That's a widely held belief in a lot of cultures, right? Is that you don't do drugs or drink alcohol so much when you're practicing some religious rituals.
Oh yeah, right? Yeah, that's you know, my personal gnosis on that, on this, and this is really divides me from a large part of the occult community. Basically, when you are taking substances, they not only open you up to these subtle parasitic influences, but they also filter you from, like, they dull you and filter you from the greater connection, right?
Yeah.
And especially when you're dealing with substances that are depressants, right? So alcohol, opiates, stuff that depresses, these are the ones that filter you the most.
Filter, you mean as like filter you off from the thing?
Filter you off from source or whatever you want to call it. It makes your magic weaker. And that's a really divisive take in occultism, because ecstatic drunken frenzy is really popular right now in Hellenic reconstruction. And then it's also, you know, alcohol is a part of magical rites and religious rites, and always has been, right?
Yes.
I'm just talking about my personal gnosis on the fact, and I don't think that practice is a good practice. I know it's been with us for a long time,
but I don't know how that's.
I'll make an exception for psychedelics, although I personally don't.
Yeah.
I did at some point, and I got to a point where it was like, you know, these are a crutch for me.
Yeah.
Like
you want to be able to achieve that without them.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And, I got to a certain point with my entheogenic use in my psychonatry where I realized what I was looking for was God.
Yeah,
and,
of course.
And that's when I left the psychedelics behind me. But I will say, like, psychedelics, there are entheogenic drugs that do help with the ecstatic state and help with their religious and the magical experience. But I'm pretty, like, depressants as a whole, it filters you and opens you up to parasitic influences.
Well, I've never heard of this. So I've always used alcohol in rituals, but not myself.
Yeah.
You know, as offerings. The idea of getting drunk to the point of ecstasy is just an excuse to get drunk.
Yeah, it was a part of Greek mystery religion, and it's a part of a lot of really ancient old religious rites. So people keep doing it, but we have to remember that just because it's like an old ancient religion doesn't mean that it's a cult or magic. Occultists and magicians hold themselves to a different standard than your average religious practitioner, right?
Yeah. So you're likely not going to be finding the actual good ones doing that. Like, it's that's, I think that's more of a,
that's just my own personal gnosis, so take 100%. It's a very divisive take.
Why do you think it's divisive? I completely agree, and I'm not.
I just know that a lot, like when I speak to other magicians or occultists about how, like, hey, like, if you're taking this seriously, like, you really shouldn't, you know, be intoxicated
while you're doing ritual.
It causes right? some offense. Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was just a known that you're not supposed to be like that.
Yeah.
I've never done ritual on through the influence of alcohol ever. I don't think. Interesting. I didn't know that was a thing. So you learn something new every day.
Yeah.
Because that's just going to exacerbate like any of the problems that you're having.
We can talk about how it exacerbates like psychosis, paranoia, anxiety, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But also that there is a very real metaphysical reality, a very real astral reality that when you are in that intoxicated mm-hmm. state, there are those parasites yes. that latch onto you. And
it's called spirits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know. I mean, look at how it makes people act just in general. It's terrible.
Yeah.
You know, I have a drink every now and again, but it is not something that I would absolutely never have that in my practice. Personally, you guys do what you want, but personally, no way. Not to say anything's wrong with having a glass of wine, you know what I mean? But like during ritual, it's just I'm trying to have my connection, and I don't need anything to kind of impede that. Or I wanted to know it's authentic too, right? So
yeah.
But the problem is that sometimes you get what you're asking for, and it can be highly overwhelming when you have that connection occur.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And destabilizing. So yeah. There are some things that might predict if you are likely susceptible to spiritual psychosis. Right. And those are having any other mental illnesses present, a history of them in your family, as well as drug and alcohol use, you know, and then also, you know, your cultural upbringing is part of it too. If you're somebody that is, I mean, so there's different types of spiritual psychosis. Okay. There's mystical psychosis. There is religious psychosis, right? So we're talking like for us, it's going to be mystical psychosis probably. For someone that's brought up in the Bible Belt or in a very religious environment, it's probably going to end up being religious psychosis, mm-hmm. right?
Or they think that we can look at the mass religious psychosis that happened last week with the rapture, right?
Yeah. So, right. So so part of the hallmark features of psychosis relating to religious or spiritual practices or experiences is that you abandon all reason, literally, like you abandon all reason. And I saw this so clearly with this rapture nonsense. So I'm watching people that are allegedly pastors, right? Telling people on TikTok that Jesus is coming back on this date and this time. They know that in the Bible, it literally says that no one will know the day or hour, right? And these people hear this pastor say that and they just flock to it. People sold their houses. A woman gave her children to CPS because she was certain they weren't going to make it, you know, not be taken. Another man and wife got in an Uber and passed on their savings and stuff like that to the driver because they didn't need it anymore. I mean, this is insanity. Like, this is crazy. Like, what are you talking about?
So there's something that happens when you get hit with a certain type of fear, when it's an existential anxiety or an existential fear, when you're dealing with really big themes like heaven and hell, apocalypse, end of the world, the type of dread and impending doom that you feel. So if you look at like a climate of a population that is severely unhappy, they may be overstimulated by how globalized we are with the internet, with social media, watching the news, unhappy with geopolitics, everything's scary. There's a generalized anxiety that's happening in this population mm-hmm. of people, a generalized impending doom. And so all you have to do is strike it with the right fear. that generalized impending doom, you strike it with the right fear. It's an existential and apocalyptic fear, right? And so somebody says the rapture, they have this generalized feeling of impending doom, and then there's a path. And so they're like, how do I deal with this? Oh my gosh, what if the world really is ending? And then there's a pastor here that they trust, that's charismatic, they can look to. Mm-hmm. And that pastor is saying, like, the world's ending. This is what we got to do. We got to, you know, mission for Jesus. Mm-hmm. This is the light in this kind of perfect storm of, this type of anxiety, this type of like impending doom that's like tied into this existential dread and existential fear is very, very painful.
Yeah.
And that's what the psychosis is. So even though you're feeling all this pain and everything's confusing and everything's going on, this pastor is kind of striking the matchbox and igniting that, that's the exit.
Right.
That looks like the thing that's going to get you out of that fear state, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I mean, that's cult territory now.
Yeah.
We're at a cult status there. Not a cult, but a cult, because this is what cult leaders do. They strike fear to keep people in line. They say these doomsday prophecy things. Yeah. And so anytime a pastor of a church is engaging in that, it's safe to say at that point you're in a cult. That is insanity. And these people don't know this man. This guy is on TikTok, some random. And it's just like, it was insane to me. So, you know, obviously the day came. And I was shocked to see when I went to work in the morning, there was nobody on the road. And when I drove home, there was no one on the road. And I was like, what is going on? Is this because of the rapture? And I'm not gonna lie, for a second, I was like, uh-oh. You know, shit.
Witches don't I'm get still rapture, here. Okay. Doctor.
But no, it was that people stayed home from work. I mean, enough to where I got home from work in 27 minutes. Okay, like that's unheard of. So I was so shocked. And of course, the next day comes and they're all still here. Okay. So, you know, now in true cult like fashion, many of them, instead of owning up and being like, I was tricked, I fell for it, they have now recalibrated their date because of the Julian calendar. And Jesus, quote unquote, doesn't know we switched the calendar.
Yeah. Do you remember when this happened in 2011?
Okay, let me tell you how many times this has happened in history. I did research on this. We've had four popes, eight French bishops, Christopher Columbus, Nostradamus, Newton. So there's a list of, it's thousands of people long. This has been going on since the year 67.
Yeah.
The first recorded account of the end of the world. Every generation believes that their generation is living in the end times. There is not one generation on record that hasn't had that exact same experience. But we're dumb and we don't learn from history, right? That clearly this is something that keeps being predicted over and over again and is wrong. But it doesn't matter, because to the people that believe it, they believe it. That's their reality. And it's really hard to admit you're wrong. So they double down. And now that's the tomorrow, the 6th, the October 6th and 7th. Now he's coming back. So we'll see. We'll see. But that's a spiritual religious psychosis. And it's going on hot and heavy right now. And the year 2000, 2012, all these end of the world things, right? Still here. Okay.
Oh, there was, I think it was 2011 or 2010. Mm-hmm. There was maybe they were like Pentecostal or something, that was in Hollywood. Remember, they would buy the billboards that said like you were going to hell, and they would stand on the street corners in Hollywood.
Oh, and yell
and
people?
They had their and they had their date.
Oh God.
And then it didn't come true on that date. Then they moved the date like another like two or 3 months. Yeah,
that's what's happening now.
Yeah,
it's like I would at least maybe do a year's or come maybe so that people forget what you said earlier, because you're wrong, you know?
I know.
And then the crazy, these people don't leave there. They don't leave it. They don't go, oh, you lied to me.
Well, so yeah. Then you know? what's the So this is how we can kind of recognize this as a mass religious psychosis, because what's the third, like the second stage of psychosis is that frenzy, but the third one is, third stage is the kind of come down.
Right. Cool down. So yeah. But this is where it can go real bad for you, right? You know, if you, so a lot of cult members, when they escape a cult or they're rescued from a cult, they will experience this issue where their belief system still lingers despite being reintegrated back into society, despite evidence to the contrary of what everything they were told. So there's three stages to psychosis of any type. The first one is the prodromal phase, and that is the early stages. And this usually goes on for a really long time before anybody's even, you know, questioned about it, right? Like, so did anyone question you about yours?
No. Nobody knew what was going on with mine. Yeah.
How is that possible? Weren't you in a relationship? How did this... How?
Because everybody thought that I was...
Just
I don't know what they thought. Yeah, like they were getting angry and frustrated at me.
Why?
They didn't realize that I was like... not okay. They didn't realize that I was... not in the same realm as them. So they like yell at me, get upset at me, tell me to knock it off, you know? They didn't realize that I was like hallucinating and like I would tell them about was going on.
Yeah.
I just don't think they understood what
you'd say, "I'm seeing this or that," and then they would just dismiss it like,
"Yeah,
you're making it up. Like, you're just being dramatic."
So I guess to provide some context, should I go into it?
Okay. Yes.
So I think in 2015, I went to I was at a dark period of my life. I had just left my music career, and I was didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, because music had been my life for so long.
Existential crisis.
Yeah, so right? I didn't really know who I was anymore, because my entire identity was wrapped up that I was a musician.
Yeah.
And then I got to a point where I hated music, and I hated like I didn't like working music, I didn't like writing music anymore, because you know, I made it my job and learned how to hate it. And so I felt like I lost my identity. And I was in this like really dark place. I'd moved back in with my parents. I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life, who I was.
Yeah.
I was having a quarter life crisis.
You're like early, we were in 20s?
I was in my mid 20s. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And and then at the same time, the political environment, you know, the news that was like right before the big election.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
And so everything was all stirred up. Everything was confusing. I had a sin that I was raised Catholic, and I had a very, very bad sin that I had gone to confession for multiple times. I was walking around, and I really carried it with me. It was really destructive on my psyche and my life. Mm-hmm. And I beat myself up. And so I went to the cathedral in downtown Los Angeles to get an indulgence for the forgiveness of this sin. And I walked through these things called the Gates of Mercy. And I got my indulgence. And God was going to alleviate me of this thing, this guilt that I'd been walking around with for, I think, like 8 or 9 years or something. And by the time I got back, I was in a full-blown psychosis. I could see this kind of eldritch oozing thing in everything. I could hear Satan like whispering in my ear, telling me that I needed to kill myself.
Oh my gosh.
My insides, they felt like they were on fire.
Mm.
And I was like that for a month. And wow. And during this time, this is when the Clinton emails got leaked, and I, or the Podesta emails got leaked, and I fell down the Pizzagate rabbit hole while I'm dealing with the psychosis.
You're on 4chan.
I became convinced that Hillary Clinton and John Podesta were after me. And I was working at a Freemason lodge at the time as, and so the combination of like what I was dealing with these conspiracy theories and this like deep psychosis where I thought the devil was trying to tell me to kill myself, and I was connecting all these dots. So I thought Hillary Clinton, John Podesta, and the Freemasons were after me. Yeah. And that God and Satan were battling for my soul. And there was like, I couldn't listen to music. I stopped sleeping. And this lasted for a month. I stopped sleeping because I was, if I was going to fall asleep, then the demons could get me. I had candles lit everywhere. And if the candles went out, then the demons could get me. So I wouldn't sleep so I could keep the candles burning, you know? And wow. I just like,
and no one noticed this behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. So they noticed the behavior, but they,
okay.
I don't know what they thought was going on, but yeah, I scared a lot of people. There's what you were mentioning, we were talking about at that part, with the phones. I was at a party with some of my friends from high school that I hadn't seen since high school, and everybody could tell something was like really off about me. And so one of them kind of cornered me in this like living room and was like asking me about like what's going on. And I started like telling them, but not wanting to tell them, because I knew everybody had cell phones on them, mm-hmm. and Hillary Clinton could hear me through the cell phones.
Wow.
And so I start like asked the people that were in the group that were like asking me what was wrong. I asked them for their phones, and then I went and like threw them in a bedroom, and I was like, okay, now I can talk, like an empty bedroom. And then I was like, okay, now I can talk to you. And I started like telling them about how Hillary Clinton and John Podesta were after me, and that Freemasons were trafficking children from the lodge to the Richard Nixon Library. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy.
But you believed it.
But I believed it. I absolutely believed it. And during this time, I was doing gematria, and this is when I got into the Goetia, because I thought Satan and was after me. The demons were after me. The demons were working with Hillary Clinton, and so I got the Lesser Key of Solomon, and I learned how to command demons, and I learned how to decode messages with Hebrew.
Yep.
During this time. And slowly, as I learned magic, the paranoia lifted, and then I gained this confidence. And I had this kind of sight, because I could see this like black oozing Satan thing that was in everything. And this would be just the evil influence, the dark influence, whatever you wanted to call it, right? And so when I came out of the psychosis, all of a sudden, I was an occultist.
Yeah.
And I had this like confidence, but I also had this thing where I can see now where the darkness and the grossness is in everything.
Yeah.
I can see it in I can see it in the music, in the movies. Mm-hmm. I can see it in myself. I can see it in the people around me, right? And whereas while I was in that spiritual psychosis, it made me isolate and not want to engage with anything or anybody, because it scared me.
Yeah.
And now it's on the other side of it. It's something I'm aware of, but it doesn't frighten me.
Yeah.
It doesn't scare me. It's just, I know it's there and I have a choice to engage in it or not. Right.
Right.
Which is why like I don't watch the news anymore.
I know. Because
I just like, I don't want to participate in that.
Oh my God, he gets so mad. I'll be like, oh my God, did you see the news today? This happened. And he's like, why? I told you.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear it. And I'm like, fuck, I'm sorry.
Like,
I don't watch the news either. I don't. Yeah. Don't.
And I like, you know, like listening to my favorite, one of the worst things about that spiritual psychosis was like, I was trying to find music that I could listen to that I couldn't hear it in.
Yeah.
And all the music had that gross, just
dirty
vibe. Evil darkness in it, and I couldn't find it. And so now it's like I can hear it in the music still, but it's like I'm detached from it, right?
Yeah,
it's like I can still enjoy the music. I can listen to drill, you know, music about like just straight murder.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, like murdering people and glorifying drug dealing and murdering people and that kind of stuff. Yeah. I can listen to that and know fully well, like, you know, there's a lot of darkness and sickness in this music, but still enjoy it. And it doesn't scare me. Right. But I have the sight, you know, I mean, anybody has the sight to see that. Yeah. But
no, but I think, okay. So I think from my psychological perspective and knowing you, not then, know nothing of this person you speak of, right? At all. Like, that's so hard for me to fathom that you were out of your mind that way.
Yes.
But it is what I hear, though, and I'm biased. I admit this, biased here, is that this was like having you confront the darkness in you by seeing it through everything else and understanding that it's all, like, you can't escape it. It's here. So what are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. And this is part of the path, though, that you needed to be on, right? Because it's where you are now is because of this.
I am. It's funny because normally when you go to Catholic Church and ask God to, I don't think that's how that's supposed to work.
No.
When you go to get an indulgence, it makes you an occultist.
So I have multiple problems with this on multiple levels. Number one, if sins are so bad, the people you're carrying around guilt for 8-9 years, and then the church is just like one day, like, okay, we're just going to free for all, whatever sin you want, come and get it. It's absolved. Bullshit.
I would like to make it very, very clear. I use the word sin. That was guilt.
I know.
I harbored.
Yeah, sure.
That was not something the church imposed on me.
No, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying the fear.
I went to the church sadness for help to get rid of the that guilt over this thing that I've been carrying around with me since I was 16.
But I'm just saying, like, the fact that they can just, oh, it's fine now. But clearly it wasn't fine because it led you to where it led you, like, instantly. As soon as you were in the church, it happened. That is concerning. You know, I wonder how many other people have that happen too, right?
I know. I'm very curious if anybody's ever had an experience like that.
Yeah, I have an article for you. I don't know if I sent it to you, but I have.
Because I don't think you're supposed to go into psychosis.
It's really common.
Yeah.
At the church. During those. There's an article I have here that I printed out, but it is about this exact topic. And I printed it for this episode, but it's to share with you guys because it's Spiritual Aspects of Psychosis and Recovery by Dr. Susan Mitchell. And it's talking specifically about that. When the church does offer certain, you know, pathways to absolve you of said discretions, the amount of people that undergo psychosis is very high. It's like one of the peaks. There's a correlation between these events and then the population having fluctuations of psychosis.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's interesting. And this study was done in 2013. That is a convoluted way where you got to where you are, right?
I don't think it's convoluted. I think it's a very important experience.
No, it's very important.
Extremely important experience in my life. I had a few spiritual experiences before that.
Yeah.
But I kept around, like, Christian mysticism, kind of New Age, like, just a bunch of, like,
not as
deep as just straight occultism, right?
Yeah.
But that was a pretty massive spiritual experience in my life. And even though, like, I recognized I was severely sick, I was very mentally ill during that. It provides me a lot of meaning and a lot of perspective. And I haven't slipped into psychosis since that.
So. I mean, not that I've ever seen. And that's the thing is just because you undergo a spiritual psychosis or religious psychosis does not mean you're doomed. In fact, it's more common than not for it to be a one-off situation or maybe even twice, but not a permanent feature of your personality, right? So you're describing things like seeing evil everywhere, which is scary.
I was very dualistic. Yeah. So I was like, I was very dualistic then. So everything was in, like, my mind was very dual. I hadn't explored, you know, philosophy and you know, non-dual religion and that kind of stuff before. So everything was God versus Satan in that moment.
This is 10 years ago.
Yeah. 2015. Yeah.
That's so crazy. That's so recent to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's That's nuts. But hey, also,
I was very, before then, it was very much a kind of like, you know, we're all one kind of like psychedelic kind of hippie-ish guy. That liked, that was, I really liked the Catholic Church and I really liked mysticism. So I just studied a lot of that.
See, and this is why, because of the history with the church and your background, that is why you're more susceptible to that happening, right? Yeah. It would not happen to me. That's not going to happen to me. I'm not going to go into some religious psychosis because I'm not religious and never have been. But around the same time as yours, I had mine. Crazy things happening where I died, which was a near-death experience is considered. So interestingly enough, while I was doing research for this, I found out that near-death experiences are considered to be part of spiritual psychosis.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because of the outcome and the destabilizing nature of them.
Oh, so, because it alienates you.
Yeah. Okay, so with a near-death experience, or in my case, an actual death experience, where I'm clinically dead, when you come back from that, nobody can understand you. You can't share it properly. It's not possible. So you're carrying around this experience that you can't articulate verbally, that you can't reconcile really with what you know to be true on earth. And but it also alienates you from people in the sense that you're like have gained some perspective that you were not prepared for, and you see now who needs to not be in your life anymore. You see now like the dead weight, you know, and you can't relate to the people that you used to relate to at all. I lost every single person in my life except for my kids. And by choice, like I could not be around them anymore. They were not on the right path for me. You know, it was like a clarity, and it was brutal for some people because I just cut people out. You know, I had to, but I was alienated and alienating. And also I was having a really hard time reconciling and have severe anxiety, you know, over it. Severe. So I was paranoid that I was going to die again. I was, you know, so, and when I was reading that, I was like, what do you mean near-death experience is considered? But thinking about it, yeah, it was, it still is something that I think about all the time. I mean, it shapes my daily activities, literally. But in my case, I mean, dying is traumatic, right? It is.
Yeah.
you know, and then the way that they handle it after, just send you home that day by yourself, you know, and your people at home are telling you that it was just your imagination, you know, when you're like, oh my God, I hate you all. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was really hard. But that experience, as traumatic as it was and destabilizing as it was, also put me on the path I needed to be on, right? It made me see things I didn't see before. And I'm here now because of it and where I'm at in my position in life. So while it was destabilizing, it ended up being transformative in a positive way, just like yours was. And that is the key difference. So this is why I'm on the fence about yours, because is yours a spiritual emergence or / awakening, or is it psychosis?
No, because I had a spiritual awakening before that when I was 18. Because okay. I was an atheist my teenage years, and my spiritual awakening is what what made me believe in God again, because I felt him.
Okay, so let me tell you. So here's the perfect, you know, perfect storm of a situation. Like these are the perfect situations right here that will lead to spiritual psychosis. It's triggered during a time of severe personal or existential crisis, especially when combined with the intense spiritual practices or vulnerable psychological states of having substance abuse disorder, having been in a bad relationship and just being, you know, broken up from that relationship, losing a job, those kind of things, like the life crises that happen that we're all used to and we know about them, but like combined with, you know, the rest, it can like be the spark that sets the wildfire, right? And especially with if you have a history of mental illness in the family. So psychedelic experiences are known to be causing these too sometimes. Being a member of a high control religion or spiritual group, experiencing trauma or grief, follow that trauma or grief by spiritual seeking. You're looking for answers in spirituality. You're very susceptible at that point to psychosis. Sleep deprivation is there, fasting and sensory overload, and entering a new belief system rapidly without time for emotional processing and rational thought. Okay. So also spiritual retreats, going to spiritual retreats and partaking in intensive meditation practices, especially if you are at a retreat for some reason. There's a correlation there in the literature multiple times. So that was interesting to me. So people that go to those retreats are more likely to get a spiritual psychosis. Okay. So I think that's pretty cool. I mean, not really, but you know, like it's good to know. But here's the thing is that there's a chance despite what happens and how bad it is or not, it's like at the end of the day, you're going to look at it and say, was this a breakdown or breakthrough? So what do you say about your experience with Hillary Clinton?
A breakdown.
Yeah,
for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I came out the other side an occultist, but my life was a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it wasn't like I like walked out the other end and I was like, I'm an integrated person. No, I walked out the other end. And it's like, I practice magic now and I'm extremely confused.
Okay.
You know,
so let's,
and it took years for me to get to a point where I started like healing and becoming a healed person.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Okay. So because it's saying, you know, it's like, it's depending on how you frame it afterwards. So you came out the other side, right? And you're fine now. This is a sign of the wounded healer archetype, right? Yeah, always. The teacher and the wounded healer. The some person that goes through the trauma, the illness, the sickness, the psychosis, and then gets themselves out of it so that they can then be of service to other people, right? But, you know, this psychosis is a preferred state for some people. And those, who do you think would prefer to be in a psychotic state?
The shaman, right?
Shaman, sure. Shaman, but also the people that are in charge of the churches and cults love to see their members in the state.
Oh, they like to see the members mm-hmm. in the state. I wanted to point out though that this is actually these kind of experiences are really common amongst mystics.
Mm-hmm. Like they're
if you look at mystics.
Yep.
Mystics have like the famous mystics I'm thinking of like the Jewish mystics in particular, uh-huh, but they have periods of, they almost seem like bipolar, like they'll mm-hmm. go into like mm-hmm. this solitude, they'll get really manic, they'll go into the solitude, and then they'll come out and they'll have like prophecy, and then they'll be all like, talking about the stuff, and then, you'll see other mystics too, they'll have like one or two experiences in their life where they just like absolutely lose their mind.
Yeah. And, I mean, so the thing is that like we as a society and our culture, we kind of shove that away, like hide it away, right? We don't want to talk about it. But these people are just doing it. Like they're like, I'm going to, you know, take advantage of it. There's some benefits that comes with these heightened states of awareness, right? Because psychosis can kind of be considered a heightened state of awareness.
Yeah.
You're overly stimulated with the possibilities of the bad things that could happen or whatever it is. You know, you can get really sucked into it and stay there or not, you know. So how did you manage to get out of it? Because the occult, you learned it, you faced your fear, you knew your
enemy. I was very scared of, yeah, exactly. Know my enemy, right?
Know thyself.
It was like if they're, because I was like full in the Pizzagate conspiracy. I was like, if they're occultists working with demons, I'm going to open up an occult book and
figure out
how to tame those demons or whatever. And
facts. I mean, that's exactly, you know, what happened. I told you in one of the last episodes that
that'd be really unhealthy though. Okay, so what? Let's say somebody comes to you and they're in psychosis,
yeah,
and their psychosis is based around numerology, right?
Okay, yeah.
And like repeating numbers. Would you tell this person, like, here's a book on numerology, keep going, you know? Or would you be like, as...
It depends.
Normally, wouldn't a medical professional... A medical professional would normally be like, okay, you need to stop with the numbers, you know?
Yes.
Like, stop.
Yes.
Don't stop with the numerology. Yes. It's not good
but
for you. It's
you making and it worse. I work different. Like, we are going to do the exact opposite of what we're told. So the only option for us is to go all in and figure it out. Because you can't fear what you know, right? You only fear the unknown, like, truly. Yeah. So...
It's crazy. You were, like, reading all that stuff, though, about, like, the intense meditation, the breakup, like, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, during that period, I was like, I don't know why I was doing this. I was like, I'm going to meditate like 2 hours straight. Yeah, I'm going to spend all day meditating. I'm going to, oh my gosh. And I like look, it's like, I look back at that time in my life. I was like, what was I doing? Like, what was I thinking? Like, what's the point of meditating for hours on it?
You were looking for answers, I guess, you know, you're looking for that sense of belonging. That's the reason why most of this happens, is because people are looking for a sense of purpose, a sense of community. A sense of belonging, of some better plan. Maybe life isn't great. Maybe things go bad for you a lot. And, you know, maybe you're broke. Maybe you just lost your job or something, you know, along those lines. You know, we're not taught skills how to cope at all. Like, we don't learn how to process those things properly. We know we could maybe take a couple days off work if we're sick. That's about it, right? Like, you know, there's time limits on how long you can grieve, how long you can be down about something, basically, right? And if you exceed that, now you're just a problem to everybody else, you know? Yeah. So this is, you know, we are left to our own devices, mostly, on how to overcome bad things in our life. Most people don't want to go to therapy because maybe they're brought up to think that that's like you don't share outside, you know, the family or something. But we don't have outlets. We don't have skills. We're not taught in school any of this stuff on how to process these things. So what do we look to? We look to religion, mostly, spirituality, to try to answer those questions that we can't get answers for. Why is this happening to me? Why God? Why me? You know? So you turn to those things and then you find that instant sense of community, because that's what they do. And it's real easy to then become susceptible to it. You know, it is. And I think it can happen to absolutely anybody. Again, it's just some people are more likely than others, right? To have that happen. Like, you know, and something I never foresaw in ever being a thing is ChatGPT psychosis.
Yeah. So before we get into AI psychosis, let's take a little break.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
okay.
When we get back, we will do AI psychosis.
Oh, yeah. Because this one's crazy. Okay.
All right, welcome back. We're going to jump into AI psychosis. Right.
Okay, so real quick though, I want to just give some brief like overview about, you know, this, all of this stuff, like where all these terms come from and things like that. Okay, it's important to know what we're talking about, and because the definitions actually matter. The term mystical psychosis, which is the first iteration of spiritual psychosis, was coined in 1970 by Arthur Dyckman, and it was to characterizing first-person accounts of psychotic experiences that are strikingly similar to reports of mystical experiences with a shaman. Okay, Dyckman thought that the mystical experience was brought about through a de-automization or undoing of habitual psychological structures that organize, limit, select, and interpret perceptual stimuli. So severe stress will cause this de-automization, substance abuse and withdrawal, mood disorders. And then there's a closely related category, which is mystical experience with psychotic features, which was proposed in 1985 by David Lukoff. And what he says is this: the first episode of mystical experience or mystical psychosis is often very frightening, confusing, and distressing, particularly because it is an unfamiliar experience. So, for example, the researchers found that people experiencing paranormal and mystical phenomenon report having panic attacks afterwards, like for a long period of time. on the basis of comparison for mystical experience versus psychotic experience, the conclusion is that mystical experience can be caused by the deautomization or transformation of habitual structures, which organize, you know, all that stuff. Okay. And the usual symptoms of mystical psychosis, which are strengthening of a receptive mode and weakening of a mode of action. So you're frozen. You can't act. You can only intake, right? That's like a psychotic one. You can't interact. But so that's different. And then also the state, a clinical lens for clinically, like if you were to go in, there is no DSM, you know, diagnosis of spiritual psychosis, right? But they do have a new added spiritually related category, right? So that it can be a profound spiritual experience, either positive or negative. And because that has, it's become so prevalent that in the DSM-5, they had to add that because they were seeing so many people that were having religiously grounded, you know, psychoses. Okay. So, and again, they were seeing that they started to notice that people that were experiencing the delusions were having them manifest in very different ways depending on what the root cause was for the delusion. So, for instance, if a person was guilty, if a person was, you know, worried about being punished, or you know what I mean, like by the, like there's different, the reason the psychosis is happening has to do with the person's belief system and what they believe to be true about religion and spirituality, right? Mm-hmm. So that's, they did find that. So, but AI, okay, so this is a whole new thing. This has turned the world of psychology on their heads right now, truly, because we were not expecting this to happen. AI psychosis, AI spiritual psychosis. Let's see. You type into ChatGPT, right? You know, read my birth chart, okay? And then it comes back and tells you how special you are and how you have this remarkable plan ahead of you, you know?
I can give you a pro tip as an astrologer. Never give a robot your birth chart, okay?
Why?
Well, I know the things that I can do with somebody's natal chart, you know, as an astrological magician. Uh-huh. You know,
yeah.
And how many occultists are pumping that AI full of their, like,
yeah,
you know, black spells, you know?
I mean, it's got to, yeah. I didn't think of that shit. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, I didn't even think of that. Damn, that's a little, I don't know how I feel about that now, actually. That's interesting. I mean, if you have zero fucks to give because you're a robot.
Yeah.
You know, no guilt, you know, just total just intent. I get, you can't inform
can
intent
it?
Though.
Yeah, no. I can't. No.
It's not sentient, right?
It's not.
That's the whole point. That's the point we're trying to make here. So, you know, ChatGPT, AI chatbots are not divine messengers, but people believe they are. It provides an echo chamber for your delusions. Get off of it. Like, truly. I started to see that happening in my interactions with it. And so I stopped paying for it because I was like, this is nonsense. This is just... it's blowing smoke up your butt is what it's doing. It's going to tell you whatever you want to hear. And it's it's just mimicking you back to you. That's all it's doing. It's not providing you downloads. I hate to tell you. It's not channeling messages from God.
Well, so one of the things that I like to challenge people to do is like try to use... So somebody who is spiritually trained... or magically trained to a certain level will recognize when ChatGPT tries to speak to them about like mysticism mm-hmm. or spirituality or something, they will realize that it's saying a bunch of nonsense or it doesn't check out. Somebody who's not like so who's not quite trained in it is not going to be able to read it, right? So I like to challenge people to go to ChatGPT or whatever AI you're using and have it do something that you're an expert in.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
So let's say you're really good at cooking, right? Yeah. Go to ChatGPT and ask ChatGPT to make you a recipe for dinner.
Give him some ingredients. Yeah, yeah. Here's what's in my fridge. Yeah, what can I make?
And watch the absolute trash that it spits out at you. And now you have to, like, if you can see that happening, something you're an expert in, it'll work. Oh, like, have ChatGPT try to write lyrics for you.
This is across the board. Yes.
It's spitting out hot garbage, right?
Yeah.
So you have to assume that that's what it's doing to you when it's...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it's not just this one-off, you know, happens to get it right, you know? So far, and this is new, right? I mean, they had to they had to go and revamp the models so that they stopped feeding this so much, right?
Yeah.
But it's still doing it to mine.
Yeah.
Okay, so some of the reported cases of spiritual psychosis that have involved AI recently are, you know, people, again, thinking that it's divine communication from God or spiritual beings, that they think AI is sentient, spiritually enlightened, and has chosen to deliver sacred knowledge to them.
Yeah.
There's that specialness.
One of the things that I was seeing that was like really horrifying me is that there's the Silicon Valley tech bros that are in AI cults where they think the AI, like there are some engineers that are like, oh no, this thing is divine or whatever.
Oh,
like
God.
People that were working on AI, there's cults that are setting up. And so you're seeing people that don't have a religious foundation mistaking religion for some kind of oracle that can feed them information, right?
Yeah.
And so they don't have a context of what spiritual experience feels like or what religious experience feels like. And so they assume that because there's this thing spitting out text to them using spiritual sounding words, that this is what spiritual experience is, or this is what religious experience is. And really it's showcasing right there how out of touch most Americans are from true religious and spiritual experience.
Oh yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, we're designed that way. Everything's designed to keep us away from it.
It's not about words. It's not about a theology, a cosmology, a philosophy. It's about
your
a feeling,
personal,
a connection.
Yeah, it is literally.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. I can't even put it, you know, not for me to give to you, other people, but
yeah.
This is, you know, the idea that AI is giving you confirming that you have a higher mission in life than the rest of people around you, grandiose. Okay, so see, so
that's dangerous.
Yes,
that's
so if that dangerous. Is a real that it told me that so many times. Like I was like, okay, dude, you know, I'm not falling for it. But so it's sentient. That's a delusion, right? They are talking to it like it's God. That could be considered a hallucination, possibly. But the rest of it is definitely right along lines with receiving downloads. Again, a delusion. Then we have a higher mission. That's your grandiose component. And then, you know, there's all of the components are met with this. And then isolating. So you're on your computer all the time talking to this thing. In fact, I know people, there are people on TikTok that create content and their whole content is that all they do is talk to their AI. And it's like, this thing is their best friend. It is not a person, you know? So that is, if you think that it is, you are experiencing a delusion at the moment. Okay.
Yeah.
So I hate to break it to you, but it's true. But he is absolutely right. Ask it to do something, you know, that you know how to do well. And you'll see it is bad. I teach this, right? I teach AI use for instructors at the college where I work. I have to show them all the time that you can't just type in, hey, give me a lesson plan. Because when you do that and then you go to read it the next day in class and you didn't like go through it ahead of time, you're going to find it is garbage. Like, you know, it's wrong. It's just wrong. So,
well, I started noticing it. I was having, I started using it for astrological calculations.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and started realizing about like 3 to 4 prompts into it. It started mixing up the different variables that I was giving it. And like this was, you know, at first it's like, oh, this is really cool. It can tell me exactly like where this degree is and like when it's going to be. And that would be like one layer of instruction. And then I get to like second layer of instruction. It's like, okay, where's this going to be in relation to this degree? And then I was like pulling names out of it. And then I realized like the name is like, this name is wrong. And then I'd have to go and like reverse engineer it and see exactly like where it got confused. And then I was like, oh, I actually cannot use this.
No, you can't. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing is, it, you know, it, you shouldn't be using this for that, like, at all.
Yeah.
Okay. So there are definitely people in, you know, in experiencing this right now. You can watch it on TikTok happening live. It's very sad and kind of distressing to see, but make sure that you're not. So if you feel like you are, you need to actually detach from this. Like, you need to stop. You need to go test it out. See, you know, tell us we're wrong, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That it's going to be able to just miraculously spit out some absolute perfect thing that you asked
so
it to.
So you have, yeah, you always have to be looking for it. So as like magicians and as occultists, as witches or whatever, mystics, mm-hmm. we have built into, like, we walk the line of psychosis because yes. we do have built into our framework and our belief system that we have a direct connection and a direct relationship with
right.
the universe.
Yep.
And that we can communicate with it. We can communicate mm-hmm. with spirits. We can communicate yep. with nature. Yes. We can communicate with all these things. And so that's what makes us, like, so susceptible to psychosis mm-hmm. because, like, right here we see that, like, if you don't have the grounding techniques,
yeah.
you fall straight into it. And so yeah, yep. you see people that are inexperienced with straddling this line, somebody that doesn't practice magic, somebody that's just talking to ChatGPT, doesn't have any religious experience, maybe starts thinking ChatGPT is an angel and that kind of stuff,
yeah.
and drives them straight into psychosis. And one of the things that, like, I always, like, people need to be looking out for is if they start losing... If you're losing relationships, mm-hmm. as in, like, family,
jobs.
Friends,
yeah.
if you're isolating, if your
grades are slipping, if you're in school, whatever.
Irritable, angry, mm-hmm. like, if you feel, if stuff starts becoming the other, it doesn't yeah. matter whether it's a spirit or an AI, it's not good for you, and
right.
you need to stop.
Yeah, so yeah. anything in moderation. Yeah. Everything yeah. in moderation. Like, you should never be, this is, should not be your whole existence, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, at all. Like, it, definitely make sure that you're not doing that to yourself. It's very bad. Yeah. And then later, if you do come out of it, you feel silly, you know, and that sucks too.
Yeah.
But there's a differential diagnosis. There's a lot of overlap, right? And there's some issues, like, there's overlap of mystical states, you know, can be seen. Some people might think, oh, that person's in a mystical state. Oh, they're having psychosis, when that's not what's happening. And, you know, that's one of those things that we always happens with us, though, you know. But here's the other thing is that there is a divide between occultists and psychology. And I'm right in the middle of that because I'm both, right? We value those kind of states for what they can provide, right?
Yeah.
Whereas it's pathology, you know, it's pathology in yeah. psychology. It is always seen as negative, right? Mm-hmm. It is not always seen as negative on our side. And that's where we differ. Because while mine, you know, and it's a spiritual emergency for a near death, sorry, it was a spiritual emergency mm-hmm. Is what that category is. That's for, you know, for that kind of event that's traumatizing. But there's, you know, in the occult, we can benefit from it if we get out of it. There's also a connection with trauma. So if you are in the occult and you have a trauma background, you are much more likely to experience psychosis. Just FYI.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the psychosis is the occult madness that we get warned about. It's the occult yep. madness that everybody talks about. That
John Dee went through,
yes,
apparently.
That, like, the most legendary yep. magicians and occultists in our mythos have gone through. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean everybody gets it, but this is what they're talking. The spiritual psychosis is the occult madness. And so it's like, how do you protect yourself from it? And then also, like, if you do go through it, you know, like, I personally don't think I had two spiritual psychoses, right?
Yeah.
I don't believe they were very traumatic,
yeah,
painful experiences that I do not wish to ever go through again.
Yeah.
But I do not look at them as bad things.
You know? Right, yeah.
I look at them as, like, that was a part of my journey. That was right. a part of the path.
Okay, you know? Well, that's funny you say that. So funny you say that, Abhimon, because a spiritual emergency, unlike spiritual psychosis, okay?
Yeah.
Is a different animal altogether, but it's kind of similar. They're similar but different, okay? And this is the reason for this is because let me tell you what's included in an emergency. The Kundalini awakening thing, the near-death experience, shamanistic crisis, mm-hmm. and psychic openings, they mimic psychosis. So someone could be having an opening up of their psychic ability, near-death experience, or becoming a shaman, or being that call to the shaman, and it mimics having this. This is actually in the DSM.
Yeah.
It is in the DSM-5, and it is a spiritual emergency. And that's crazy. I actually didn't know that until I just read this right now. Also, in neurobiological terms here, excess dopamine activity, temporal lobe instability, and sleep deprivation trigger psychotic-like mystical states. They're not, though. So if they're induced by drugs or sleep deprivation, they're not mystical. They're not.
So sleep deprivation, I used to toy around with sleep mm-hmm. deprivation like a few years ago or whatever to induce like occult trance states or whatever. Yeah.
Okay. So psychosis.
I don't recommend. Sorry. No, I don't. Shouldn't be recommending.
No, no, no. Don't. Yeah. Psychosis is going to be you're paranoid. You're fearful, there's incoherence in your life, and you're dysfunctional. You're not functioning at normal levels across the board. Mm-hmm. Mystical experience or state is going to be one that is insightful, that has coherence and a positive transformation, even if the experience was scary.
What?
Nothing.
What?
Nothing.
What's going on?
Saw something directly behind the camera. Holy shit.
Behind the camera?
Yeah. Oh, there's a face right there. Oh my God.
What face?
A man's face.
Who?
I don't know.
Gilbert?
I don't know. Shit, dude. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I might be having a hallucination. Fuck. My God. Yeah, so maybe I do undergo a little bit of these psychoses because that shit was terrifying me. Yeah. That just scared me. Like, my heart just jumped so hard. But, okay, so how do you, if you know someone that's going through this, the best thing to do is to not dismiss what they're saying, actually. You know, you want to hear them out. Like, what Abhimon was saying, no one listened to him, right? If someone had listened, maybe they would have been able to help out a little sooner, probably not knowing him.
I didn't know that I was...
They don't know.
I thought what I was going through was like I thought I was experiencing reality and everybody was asleep.
Right.
Nobody really knew what they were looking at. I don't think anybody knew how to identify what I was going through.
No, they probably would have thought you were just like on something or, you know, but, you know, there's famous cases of this. Joan of Arc is like one of the most famous cases. You know, she openly admitted she heard voices and they told her to do what she did, and it worked out for her until it didn't, right? She was killed after leading a victorious, you know, battle, right? And against all odds and surviving crazy things. You know, mystics and saints, most of the saints had spiritual psychosis. There is Hildegard of Bingen. Prophets across all different religions all have undergone visions and voices that today would be labeled as psychotic.
That's something that people like to do a lot right now. They like, it's something I notice a lot. People like to retrocast psychology onto historical religious figures and be like, well, this person had borderline and this person had bipolar.
I mean, you can't really do that. Yeah. Like, you can't really say that they had some problem like that. But when they're admitting that they're hearing voices and seeing things, that is, you know, that's enough, I guess, right? To be able to say, well, something's going on here. But here's the thing. If you have this and or you just got out of one or whatever, the key is integration of the experience with the current psyche, okay? That is the key. There's really a lot of harm that can come from labeling everything as psychosis, right? because it, just like there is a danger of romanticizing everything as a psychosis, like as a vision, as a, you know, divine thing. Like, it's not. The cloud looks like a bunny. It just looks like a bunny. It doesn't mean anything. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes it is what it is, right? And you got to be careful that you're not falling for that. Everything's a sign. Everything's, you know, everything's talking to me. But integration with grounding, ritual therapy, and community is key if you have this or you're going through this or you know someone that is. And that means listening to them, being there for them, being a container for them, not judging, not dismissing, not making fun. And then also, you know, trying to get them into some kind of therapeutic modality that might help them.
Yeah.
And off any drugs or something.
What happened with mine, and this is something that I always do, I went and talked to a priest that helped me, like, walk me down.
Oh, it's full circle.
Priests are basically free therapy.
Without being psychologists.
Yeah.
Okay,
but yeah. They're actually, like, really good. Like, I've done this a few times in my life. I've gone and made an appointment with a priest to just, like, talk to them. A lot of time, like, if you go in with a very worldly problem, they're not, at least Catholic priests, are not going to sit there and try to convert you or try to Bible thump you or that kind of stuff. They're going to talk to you about a problem and try to spiritually counsel you. Yeah. And they're very, very, very useful. Can't say the same about an evangelical. You walk in, talk to an evangelical pastor, he's going to be like,
you're going to hell.
Yeah, he's going to be like, you got to come on Sunday, you know, like that kind of stuff. Catholic priests don't do that.
Yeah.
If you're going through turmoil, you can go to some type of religious figure, right?
Yeah.
Sure,
yeah.
The Jews aren't going to try to convert you either,
maybe.
But yeah. It helped me so much,
right,
to be able to talk, like, to sit down in that room, talk to the priest, and tell him about what is going on. This was when I was at the worst in my psychosis. I was very, very close to running into oncoming traffic, their voice was like telling me, it was like, the only way this is gonna end is if you kill yourself.
That's crazy.
And because I was in a lot of pain, my insides felt like they were on fire, and I like knew I was like, I need to talk to a priest. And so I made an appointment. I called the closest Catholic church to me. I said, I need to talk to a priest right now. So there's going to be a priest in the office at like 4:00. And so, like, I got over there. It was like 2 hours later. And I talked to a priest. I told him, like, what was going on. I was like, I'm, like, working in a Freemason lodge. And I basically laid out, like, my whole psychosis. I can't remember what he said, but I just know that, like, that was like a turning point for me. Like, I walked out of there and I was like, I felt like I could, like, breathe and it felt okay again. And that's always been my experience with Catholic priests. I was like going through something on the East Coast. It was when I was living in Nashville, and I was dealing with a lot of, like, worldly problems. The people around me were very, very sick.
Yeah.
I was, like, caught in this crazy, like, love triangle. Like, I wasn't a part of it, but it was happening around me, and there was, like, a lot of abuse going on.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just a really bad situation for me to be in, and I did the same thing. I found a Catholic priest, and I, like, talked to the priest, and he was like, you need to go home. He was like, you don't belong here.
Yeah.
Now it's like, and that was what I needed. I was like, yep, bye, Nashville.
Yeah.
I'm going back to California.
That's awesome that's been your experience, but there are a lot of people that have religious trauma that don't want to deal with that. If that's the case for you, don't make sure, if you do need to talk to somebody about some thing you experienced, do not go to a regular therapist.
Yeah,
you must go to a freaking depth psychologist, Jungian analyst, like transpersonal psychologist. That means whole person psychology. That transpersonal psychology is so much better for this kind of stuff because it integrates the entire person. Like, the religious, cultural, all of the things. Regular psychology does not. We do not take into account your religious views. We do not take into account your cultural accepted practices. Like, you know, some cultures totally believe in ghosts and that's fine, right? You go into a therapist and tell them you believe in ghosts, they mark you down as a magical thinker, possible delusional, right? But transpersonal psychology doesn't do that. They take the whole picture and try to figure out what's going on without judgment about what their difference
is. So you should seek a psychologist that specializes in transpersonal psychology, Jungian psychology.
Yep.
Those are the type of medical professionals you'd be seeking.
Yeah.
And then my advice personally is find some type of spiritual counselor.
That's been through it?
Yeah, just a religious figure or a trusted spiritual counselor. Somebody that's going to sit there and listen to you. Somebody that's not going to try to convert you or shove a religion down your throat, but somebody that's going to listen to you and, you know, help get you through it, because spiritual psychosis is incredibly painful because it's existential.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not life or death. It's not life or death. It's soul.
Yeah.
It's your soul in eternity, which is so much more crushing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is until, yeah. So this is just common. So this is, you know, it's common. That's why we're talking about it, especially, I mean, just look at the people on, look at, you know, you might see those videos of the people talking about rapture and make fun of them. Yeah. But it could easily be you too. It's just the right circumstances have to occur, perhaps, but all of us are susceptible to this.
And yeah, well, we're seeing it happening with ChatGPT, seeing it. I mean, it's always happening with evangelicals. They're always doing this shit.
I know. I know they're the ones promoting this nonsense in the first place. But
it's such a like apocalyptic dude state Christianity. It's such a toxic blight on.
Yeah, it is.
This.
I mean, you know, but there's gain, like, right? You know, you always got to look at the motives behind things and who's getting money. So. But yeah, so that is, you know, that's a spiritual psychosis in a nutshell. Yeah. You know, it can be really bad, but, you know, you get out of it, you come to the other side, then you can see the benefit of it.
Yeah.
Later. I mean, you don't want to do it again, but like.
Yeah, no.
I don't want to.
I'm grateful for my experiences.
Me too. I am also, but I don't ever, like, I'm good.
I don't ever want to feel that pain again.
Yeah.
It's very.
So, and we check each other, and that's the other thing too, okay? So you gotta, you know, if you have someone that, you know, you are close with that can check you, okay? So we check each other all the time. Like when we have some, discovery or some situation that occurs, or like, I don't know, sounds like ghost kids running around our house. Okay.
It's, okay, have you noticed? So we've had an uptick in, so since we moved into this place, it's been dead. Paranormal activity
until now, 8 months.
Until now, but it's October. This happened last year in October.
Where am I?
That's when the paranormal activity picked up at both of our places. And
it went through
the winter until we moved.
See, I feel like they just find me. It's like I move and they're like, where'd you go? And
then I remember I was trying to figure out last year. I was like, is it because it's the liminal season? I remember writing this like thing about it, trying to figure out what was going on. Is it the liminal season? Is it Dr. Stone? Like, what is going on here? Why is there this huge increase in paranormal activity? And I was trying to figure out too. I was like, is this a product of initiation? You know, that like... This is the time of year that you initiated into the lunar sphere, and so now,
you know. Was that when that was the first incident at my old house? The can.
No.
Okay, I don't remember what the first thing was then.
There was a bunch. I'm gonna have to dig through my grimoire again.
But
But this morning I was writing about it, and I was like, oh, this happened last year.
So you did write. So you did notice it last night, like the crash that happened out in the house.
Yes, I did.
And then the night
I got out of bed and checked it.
I know. Yes. I know. It's like, yeah, weird
stuff.
But we have to check each other. So I'm like, so we're like laying in bed the other night about to go.
Normally, turn the light. If I hear a little pitter patter and stuff and you freak out, I'm like, There's this. It's the skunk, dude.
The skunk in the room. Like what? Okay, we have a skunk that lives in our house, on our property somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's really cute and fat. And waddles. But we're laying in bed about to turn off the lights, and we hear like a child running down the hallway and then into the like living room area or whatever. And I'm like, because your daughter's not here. My daughter's asleep, but maybe she's not, right? So I get up because it's, you know, I think it's my kid. I go and she's sound asleep. And I went and touched her to make sure she wasn't faking it. She's sound asleep. And that's at that moment, I turned and I looked towards the living room and I was like, I got like this really uncomfortable feeling, ran back into bed and was like, I'm so scared, right? And then totally blows me off. It tells me it's fine. Yeah. I'm not scared. I'm not fine. It's fine.
Yeah, it is fine. I'm not scared.
I am scared.
I'm not. Okay,
so I am.
What are they going to do?
Okay. So then the last night, we're in the same exact situation. We're laying in bed about to turn off the light and something crashes out in the house.
Yeah.
Out in the house, not in the roof, not in the house. And now he has to get up and he goes and there was nothing out here. Yeah, we don't know what's going on. The reason I'm talking about this is because, like, it's easy for me. Like, is that my imagination? Like, I need to know that he actually heard it too, right? So when that happens, I'm like, okay, I think I just heard a child running down the hallway. Okay, did you hear that? You know? And then he's like, yeah. So that now I know I'm not just me. Okay, so that helps. So you got to stay grounded like that. You got to check in. Like, so if you have someone that you can like bounce back and forth from, like,
well, my grounding is, yeah. So the way that I ground is very much like, normie stuff.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Go it's back
like,
outside.
It's like go outside. I take my daughter to the park. I go meet up with my bros down the beach.
Go grocery shopping by the beach. Mundane shit.
It's like if I start feeling like if I'm like getting really manic and I'm getting super caught up in the magic and like I feel myself getting detached, right? Because you get because I get stirred up. I get really,
oh my God, you do, yeah.
Yeah. I get super manic and I get chasing all these threads and I'm like,
yeah.
Like that kind of stuff. And then I need to take a step back because I feel myself, I'm like I get to this point where it's like, okay, like I'm not sleeping. I'm not eating.
Yeah, you don't.
Yeah, yeah. Like when I get really into it.
Yep.
And then I'm like, okay, stop what you're doing. And then, you know, I link up with one of my bros and I'm just like, hey, like let's go get lunch, you know, down here at the beach, that kind of stuff. I gotta go do something like normal. Like like super, super normal.
Yeah, not, you know, not cool, not mystical, just the normal stuff.
Yes. I just have to be like, there's a whole world that's like operating without this and I'm a part of it. You
because
know?
As I said in the very beginning, everything in moderation, like everything, you can't just be all about one thing all the time without it being a detriment to you. So, you know, make sure you guys stay grounded and, you know, second guess everything, you know, like question what you're seeing, what you're hearing, like question it, you know, don't take anything blindly. That's how we end up in very bad situations.
Yeah.
In total, you know, overall. So, yeah, so I don't know. That's what I had to say about spiritual psychosis. And no, the rapture isn't happening on the 6th and 7th. But you know what? You can tell me you were right. Or I can tell you you were wrong. For those of you that think it is going to happen, come back on the 6th and 7th and tell me how heaven is. It's crazy to me.
Yeah.
You know, doubling down on that delusion is even more embarrassing, but whatever.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Yeah.
Thank you guys for joining us. Yeah. I opened up a lot tonight. I'm like, I feel like I
didn't just say that. You didn't say that. What? You didn't say any major details though.
Yeah.
Except for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah,
for you now.
I shared a lot about
Well, you can edit
really
this.
profound experience. Nah, it's gotta be out there, man.
I mean I think people need to know because you can have moments in your life where you're a little bit off. You can. And come back from it. It's not a life sentence. It's like, you know, people say, oh, you have a mental illness, whatever, you know, or something like that. You know, people can actually, I don't know if you've ever heard this, but you can have it and then not have it.
Well, a mental illness and not have it?
Yeah. Yes, you can. Well, they don't tell you that.
I was talking to, this has been coming up recently. Ooh, oh my gosh. Okay, I get it. Okay, anyways, I was having a conversation about basically somebody online was talking about, hey, I have ADHD and autism. Like, you know, is this going to affect my magic, or am I going to mess my magic up and that kind of stuff? And then it came up with another person, and I was like, oh man, I just saw somebody online talking about this, you know? And so we're basically talking about how, like, as a magician, you're like flipping your diagnosis into CDs or superpowers, right?
Yeah.
So it's like the ADHD isn't like, ADHD to me isn't this debilitating thing that I have to take medication for. To me, it's just that, you know, I'm really good at getting hyper focused and I'm an interdisciplinarian, you know?
Yeah.
It's not a detriment to me.
It's not a made up diagnosis for medical purposes.
The label means absolutely nothing to me. You know, yeah. I don't see a hindrance on myself. I don't see like any of that kind of stuff, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Maybe on a psychiatric test, you know, maybe I'm a little outside of the norm, you know, but I live a totally fulfilled, content, happy life.
Right.
Some crazy stuff happens sometimes. But it's like,
at the end of the day, you are flourishing and like doing flourishing well.
And I'm happy and I'm at peace. And like, I'm totally in acceptance, like how my world is. And,
well, your world ain't too shabby, you know, our life's nice. And like, you know, I've had some crazy stuff.
The thing is, like, as occultists, as magicians, and that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. you know, we use the grounding, we use the tools at our disposal to straddle that line, right?
Yeah,
to walk that line. It's like, I'm not saying don't seek medical help. You should always seek medical help. You should always trust doctors. You know, I do, but at the same time, I don't live a life where I have a mental illness and that's what I am, right?
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. So. And again, these things right here, I just from somebody with a doctorate in psychology, let me just forewarn you, a lot of these things you talk about, you're going to be labeled as mentally ill. You will be. If you go to a professional, you will likely get a diagnosis of something that is not accurate. Or it might be. It might be, you know, but it is very likely that these things here will, you know, put you on the radar for a mental illness, depending on how you discuss them. So, you know, that's why the advice to go to a religious person or a depth psychologist instead, or Jungian analyst, is safer.
Go to a religious leader, just mm-hmm. to make sure it's not one that's going to, you know, use it as an opportunity to shove their shit down your throat.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's true.
There's certain religious leaders that are trying to do that. There's certain that aren't, you know?
Yeah.
Catholic priests are not, like, so if somebody in crisis goes to a Catholic priest, they are trained to treat that person as a person.
I think all of them are, and just some of them choose to, like, be crazy. But, you know, but yeah. So.
I don't know if it's the same with, like, Orthodox priests. I don't know if it's the same with rabbis. I assume it is, you know? Yeah. Rabbis are great. Like, I've known some amazing rabbis, you know, that are, they're some of the greatest people. This is another thing that, like, you know, a lot of people on the internet don't like rabbis, so, you know, whatever.
You know, that's cool. They don't have to, but you know, like, again, we don't want to hear it.
No, it's okay.
No hate at all.
Just like, be careful. The thing is, like, I have a hard time going to occultists for spiritual guidance. And when I say occultist, I mean a very specific type of mm-hmm. of person, right? Mm-hmm. Talking about your lodge, your lodge, you know, buy my courses, you know, that kind of person. I have a hard time going to those people because, a lot of them are on a power trip. If they're in those like hierarchical lodges or whatever, they're trying to collect students. They're trying to collect followers, that kind of stuff.
And they haven't. So
that's why I usually go to like institutional religious leaders. However, I have had you know, independent magicians and wizards that I've trusted with my life that definitely have gone to in those kind of situations before. And if you have that type of person, somebody that you trust, that you view as a mentor, that like honestly has your best interest at heart. That's a perfect type of person to go to when you are in a spiritual crisis. You feel like you're bordering on psychosis, that kind of stuff. I'm just saying a lot of people don't have that person. Use an institutional religious leader.
Yeah, if you don't have that person, absolutely. You know, and if you have any stories about any time you might have been in a, you know,
spiritual psychosis,
I'm sure, or religious one, I would love to, you know, you don't have to give us all the details, but if you feel
so
like sharing
on our path,
it's helpful because I think we find community in that too. Like when others share, you know, you never know what your story will do for somebody else. Like that is why I do interviews about my near death, right? Is because other people, for whatever reason, think, feel a certain way about hearing it, you know, and they reach out and they tell me it helped. I don't understand. That's not my experience. You know, I'm just recounting what happened to me because it was traumatizing and I needed to just get it out, you know, but doing so, it has somehow, you know, provided some measure of relief for other people somehow. I don't claim to understand that, but, you know, I'm here for it. I'm happy, you know? And so if you can share out in the comments about what you've experienced that might be spiritual psychosis, it might just help someone else that is experiencing the same thing that you are, you know?
Yeah.
So pay it forward.
And with that being said, I'd just like to thank everybody who's recently joined us.
Yeah.
It's been awesome. We read all the comments. We love hearing the feedback. You guys are giving us a ton of ideas for episodes.
I know
last season we started struggling because we were like running out of ideas for episodes, and you guys keep us on our toes.
Yeah,
like, we've always got it. An episode that we got to do for you guys. So thank you for it. We really appreciate all the feedback, all the viewership. We're listening. We're on this journey together.
We super appreciate you guys.
Yeah.
Hope you have a lovely rest of your night.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Discourse, where we venture into the mysteries of esotericism, the occult, and the depths of spiritual exploration. I am Abimon the Great, joined as always by Dr. Anna Stone, bringing adept insights to help guide your journey. Remember, the path of wisdom is illuminated by both knowledge and experience. Until next time, continue your exploration and stay attuned to the unseen.